Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Mr. Dennis Hart. Hello, Dennis. It is my great pleasure to be hosting a show live with you today.
It is our first time this summer, and I hope it's not the last, Ursula. It's good to be here. Good to see you. Well, and thank you, the listener. Thank you for joining us. We have a very big show today. Let's start, as always, on Friday with local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. And we're going to start with last Saturday's Tribune, which reported that a fire broke out Friday morning at the city's resource recovery refuse-derived fuel bin at East 3rd Street and East Avenue. Fire crews responded quickly and put out the blaze. No one was injured. Saturday's Trib also reported that the Story County Justice Center is dealing with hail damage after all the storms we've had this spring and early summer. Hail caused about 300 holes in the roof of the Justice Center. The county's insurance adjuster says the entire roof, all of it, needs to be replaced. The roof is still under an insurance company warranty, and it's not clear how much the county would have to pay, but it's going to be some money. The Tribune also had another story about the ongoing saga, the never-ending saga of the Whatcha Smokin' Barbecue and Brew Company in Luther. Less than 2 months after owner Tanya Doyle settled a lawsuit filed against her business, she now says the city of Luther is targeting Whatcha Smokin' through ordinances that regulate such things as noise, fences, vegetation, and fireworks. City officials deny they're trying to run her out of business. But the most unforgettable story by far in Saturday's Trib, the front pager you probably saw, about faith, hope, justice, and love. Those happen to be the new names of four kittens that were discovered abandoned in a black plastic box that had been taped shut and left in front of the Boone Humane Society building. Small holes had been cut in the top of the box, but the kittens were near death because of heat and dehydration. The Humane Society's director, Vanessa McCutcheon, who found the box, got the kittens out and placed them on ice packs. Then the little creatures were rushed to All Pets Animal Hospital here in Ames, and they were put into an oxygen tank, and they received IV fluids and a variety of medications. The kittens somehow survived, and they will soon be up for adoption. You can see their pictures on the front of last Saturday's Tribune. A great story indeed. In Sunday's Trib, a long takeout on how communities in Iowa are trying to prevent suicides. Iowa's suicide rate has risen 36% since 1999. Every 20 hours, someone in Iowa dies from suicide, second leading cause of death for people between the ages of 18 and 34. Iowa's Public Health Department budgets $50,000 a year on suicide prevention. State lawmakers have created a 24-hour crisis hotline and passed mandatory requirements for the state's 14 mental health regions to create crisis services for people, but the regions themselves will have to fund those services. You can read much more about it in Sunday's Tribune. Sunday's paper also reported that the Ames Laboratory on the Iowa State campus is going to get nearly $11 million in federal money to establish a new research center devoted to topological semi-metals and how they change the electronics people will use in the future. In simple terms, ones that even I can understand, topological semi-metals can be used to process information but with an extremely low level of electric resistance. Why is that important? Because that could dramatically reduce the amount of electricity needed to power the world's electronics. There was more in Sunday's Trib, including a look back at how the Ames City Council passed an ordinance nearly 20 years ago that restricted smoking in the city's restaurants. That ordinance became the catalyst for changes to smoking laws throughout all of Iowa, even after the state Supreme Court eventually overruled it in 2003. Because after that happened, the state passed its own smoking ban, one that outlawed smoking in public places, at work, and in restaurants. And one more story of note in Sunday's Trib, word that the Ames Police Department was planning to host another Donuts in the Park event at Inez Grove Park on Monday morning. Police said the event would provide a more laid-back environment for the community to interact with others. The Trib does not publish on Mondays. Tuesday's edition had a long piece about former Iowa Governor Robert Ray, who died Sunday at the age of 89. The former governor was not born in Story County, nor did he attend Iowa State, but he had a link to one of the most recognizable organizations in Ames, YSS, which provides young people with mentors, transitional living services, addiction treatment, and much more. After a young man committed suicide at the Marshalltown Jail back in 1974, then-Governor Ray visited what was called Shelter House in Ames. He told reporters that he wanted to work toward change so that underage status offenders would no longer be put in jail. Ray helped Shelter House organization, which became YSS, get a grant, and that was a major step toward putting YSS on everyone's map. Robert Ray was a Republican, but kind remembrances came from both Democrats and Republicans. Story County GOP Chair Brett Barker said, in his words, he was able to respectfully work with everybody. Story County Democratic Party Chair Jan Bauer referred to how Ray reached out to Asian refugees when, in her words, the rest of the world was turning a blind eye to them. Also Tuesday in the Tribune, word that the Ames School Board unanimously approved the hiring of a new associate principal, who will be shared between the Fellows and Meeker Elementary Schools. He is Matt Marietta, who earned his bachelor's and master's degrees from Iowa State, and who has experience as a principal at several schools in Colorado. He also taught in the Ballard Community Schools. Tuesday's Trib also had the unfortunate word that one man died Sunday afternoon when he lost control of his car and crashed into a utility pole on U.S. Highway 69 near the Story in Hamilton County line. He's identified as 34-year-old Chad Chelsvig of Iowa Falls. Authorities said he was not wearing a seatbelt. There was also a report that a Nevada man who had pleaded guilty to sexually assaulting a 9-year-old girl last year has been sentenced to 10 years in prison. Authorities said 73-year-old James Edward Moore will spend the rest of his life on the state's sexual offender registry. And the Trib reported that the preliminary hearing for the Ames man who allegedly led authorities on a high-speed chase from State Center to Ames last month has been set for July 30th. 47-year-old Brent Eldon Weber is charged with eluding authorities as well as speeding, operating a vehicle without a valid license, and unlawful possession of a prescription drug. One more note from Tuesday's Trib, word that a small part of the 1920s roared back to life at the Ames Municipal Airport on Monday afternoon. Maybe you were there when a group of pilots flying vintage planes performed aerobics and took people on rides. The American Barnstormers Group, which shows off aircraft from the 20s and 30s, fired up their planes for all the onlookers. Spectators watched as one of the planes performed a variety of stunts. Among those onlookers, a group from the Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown. Good for them. Wednesday's Trib reported that the opening of the new flyover bridge at the Interstate 35 Highway 30 interchange could be delayed until next year. Yes, that's right. The reason? The tops of the piers were installed incorrectly, and they have to be fixed. The Minnesota-based project contractor is working on those needed repairs. At Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting, the supervisors learned that the 280th Street Bridge over the Skunk River has now been repaired after it was closed last November when it was damaged by what officials believe was an overloaded vehicle. But the bridge will not reopen until details about what kinds of vehicles can use it can be worked out. Wednesday's Trib also had word that the Ames City Council has delayed the second reading of an ordinance that would grant certain exemptions to homes in the city's new rental cap neighborhoods. The council wants to hear public input on potential changes to the measure before approving it. The council is trying to potentially offer different options to homeowners who have been restricted by the 25% rental cap the council recently placed on 7 Ames neighborhoods. And one more note from Wednesday's Trib, word that the project to build the new Ames High is moving forward into the schematic design phase. Currently, the new high school is estimated to be 406,000 square feet. But that number likely will change. That first estimate, based on accommodating 1,600 future high school students and the ability to eventually accommodate 1,800. The cost of the new high school and the new swimming pool is currently estimated at $123 million, which, yes, is more than was initially laid out for the project. But as the project moves ahead, changes likely will be made to bring it back on budget. At least the school board hopes so. Thursday's Trib reported that the cost of the new Ames High School district tennis courts, yes, it's gone up. The school board has approved 2 change orders for the courts. One is a $91,000 addition to install tennis court lights. The other, for $23,000, is to import sand to be used for concrete. Seems the local sand that was going to be used for the concrete has certain components that could result in pop-outs in the finished concrete work. Now, for those of us who don't know what that is, including me, pop-outs are small craters that show up on the surface. Using sand imported from eastern Iowa will help reduce the potential for those pop-outs. The budget for the tennis court project is now nearly $1.6 million. First estimated cost, yep, $1.2 million. Thursday's Trib also reported on the strange case of a man who graduated from Ames High decades ago and who was shot and fatally wounded in Kansas City, Kansas last Sunday while he was meeting someone to buy an iPhone. Uni Somsonith, who lived in Lee's Summit, Missouri, was 45. Police have not released any information about the killing. And one more note from Thursday's Trib, word that a new workshop designed to give young people a chance to learn about the world of drag is coming to the Ames Public Library this summer. For 4 days later this month and in August, there will be programming covering the history and culture of drag, makeup, costuming, and performance skills. The first session will take place July 21st, starting at 1 o'clock. Today's Trib, Friday's, reports that because of flooding, and this is a big story, the Register's annual Great Bike Ride across Iowa will not run through Ledges State Park in Boone, as had been planned. The ride has been rerouted around Ledges rather than through it on July 24th. Instead, thousands of riders will head south on South Story Street out of Boone, then turn left onto Highway 30 before turning south again onto County Road R27. The riders eventually will still wind up in Ames that day, the 24th. Today's Trib also reports that the discrimination lawsuit against Story County Treasurer Renee Tweet has been officially dismissed. That suit alleged that Tweet had discriminated against 59-year-old Connie Kenyon, a former employee in the treasurer's office, because of her age. Today's Trib also has word that a new director has been chosen to head Iowa State University's Carrie Chapman Katz Center for Women in Politics. She is Karen Kedrowski, who is currently a political science professor at Winthrop University in Rock Hill, South Carolina. She's going to replace Diane Bystrom. And one more note from today's paper, and this is a good one. Iowa State's Memorial Union has been chosen as one of the nation's most amazing campus student unions in a ranking released this week. The union was built 90 years ago and serves as home to more than 900 student clubs, a bowling alley, art exhibits, and more. Congratulations to the Iowa State Memorial Union. You're one of the best. We knew that. There you have it, a summary of this week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune, all you ever wanted to hear and more. I'll be back here live on Wednesday morning, Ursula, with a look at news from the pages of several nearby newspapers.
Thank you, Dennis. This weekend, we'll see the return of a grand annual event in Ames. If you live in Ames and stay around in the summer, you're no doubt already aware of the Iowa Games. You really can't miss it if you're here in July. If you have ever wondered exactly what the Iowa Games are, this is a statewide event that gives every Iowan a chance at the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. The Iowa Games give opportunity to everyday athletes, school children, and senior citizens to experience Olympic-style competition and compete in Olympic-style ceremony and events. And they offer competitive events for all ages and all abilities. And as of recently, non-Iowans who do not have an opportunity in their own states are also allowed to come to Ames to compete here in the Iowa Summer Games. So for insight into this remarkable event that comes around every summer, KHOI's reporter Colin Berzak visited with two of the organizers of the Iowa Games, and he brings you this report. They start out by inviting you, as a member of the community, to come out and enjoy the festivities, even if you're not competing in the athletic events. The festivities are kind of known as a signature of the Iowa Summer Games, including an Olympic-style opening ceremony and an athletic jamboree. Colin?
On July 14th, the annual Iowa Summer Games will begin right here in Ames. Joining me in studio today is Assistant Sports Director Megan Hansen and Director Katie Kramer. The games are on everything from baseball to rowing. And I saw you guys have other events, I mean, outside of participating in just the sports, there's like a jamboree and stuff like that. So is that open for just the entire community to come in?
Yeah, absolutely. So the athlete jamboree is open to the community. We actually really encourage a lot of the community to come out. We'll have food trucks, inflatables, there'll be vendors there, games, and then our opening ceremony is after that inside Jack Trice Stadium. So we have a speaker, and we have some national entertainment that will be coming.
Yeah, and that's what makes the Iowa Games so unique. We really try to create that family-friendly, community-involved feel. This wouldn't happen without volunteers. At the end of the day, 3,000 volunteers help us get the games off the ground and going. And so just come and have a great time at that event with our athlete jamboree and opening ceremony, because it's a lot of fun.
And we have skydivers, fireworks. We kind of take it off the Olympics, where they have a parade of athletes. Countries come in. We have a parade of athletes, so teams are coming in with their team. They get to come walk across Jack Trice Stadium, get their picture, their, you know, video up on the screen. Then I think it's one of the most memorable things other than the competition.
Director Katie Kramer, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what your position entails.
I was born and raised here in Ames. I participated in Iowa Games as a child and then started with Iowa Games about a year and a half ago. And so we'll work with Megan to get all the team registrations in, you know, rally our volunteers together, facilities, everything that goes into putting the games on. So,
Sports Director Megan Hansen.
I compliment Katie in that fashion, where I jump in and help with the communication with our sports commissioners, with the facilities. I spearhead up our winter games in Dubuque, and I joined the Iowa Games team September of last year. So it'll be my one-year anniversary coming up here in a couple months. And I grew up in Wisconsin, and so participated in the Badger State Games. That is the same events that our Iowa Games are for Iowa residents.
What made you want to be in the position that you're in currently?
Yeah, I worked here in Ames for for Park and Rec for 5.5 years. So coordinated the youth and adult leagues there. And it's just a fun way to be involved, you know, and get that competitive side out in you. It's kind of just a unique opportunity for participants in the community to be a part of. You know, we have our opening ceremony and athlete jamboree that we have as well to kind of kick off on our main weekend. So we bring in a speaker, entertainment. So it's just a, like I said, just a unique event to be a part of. And it's part of the National Congress of State Games. So there's about 32 other states that have a state games and host it. So it's just fun to be a part of that uniqueness, I guess.
Absolutely. I came from a physical education background. And so any opportunity with getting youth involved in a grassroots effort to stay active, to try a new sport, to get outside their comfort zone, whatever that might look like, not even youth, but we also have adults who do that. It's a really fulfilling opportunity and position to be in. I mean, last year we had a 3-year-old who was swimming to a 94-year-old man who was pitching horseshoes. So there's something for everyone with the Iowa Games. It could be, like I said, a novice to a more experienced competitor who wants to have that Olympic-style experience, but maybe would never obtain going to the Olympics. So it's just great to offer those things to the public.
The Iowa Games started in August of 1987, is that correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
It was that initiative from the National Olympic Committee that wanted to provide the opportunity for more people to participate in an Olympic-style sports festival. And so when they started the National Congress of State Games, Iowa joined in on that initiative back in 1987.
I actually read on your guys' website that Iowa almost broke the record for most people in attendance for, I think, the opening state games with like 7,800 people.
Yeah.
Since then, has the attendance gone up?
We're at about 13,000 athletes is our goal this year over the course of 50 different sports that we have. So each year it continues to grow.
Do you guys rotate sports in and out every summer, or do you integrate new sports and keep all the rest of them?
Our sports are ran by our sports commissioners. So these are individuals who are passionate about giving the opportunity for that sport. So we've had commissioners who have been with us from the beginning. And then when we bring in a new sport, that might be someone else who's come to us and said, you know, I'm really passionate, for example, about foot golf. That's our new sport this year, where it's a combination of golf and soccer. And that commissioner is first time, and they're just the one spearheading the event to get going. So we always are open to new events, and we definitely love it when it comes from a person or club or committee that's willing to spearhead it and spread the word about that event happening in the Iowa Games lineup.
What tend to be the most popular during the games?
I would say most of the team sports, you know, so basketball, soccer. We usually get about 170 soccer teams is where we sit, and that's just on the youth side. So then we have adult the next weekend as well. Figure skating is a really popular individual sport. At the State Games of America last year in Grand Rapids, Michigan, they had over 700 figure skaters. And then swimming is another popular one. Track, martial arts between taekwondo and judo and all the different types that you have. That's another real popular individual one. And it kind of ranges every year on what the trend is.
So how old do you have to be to compete in the Iowa Games?
It depends on your sport, honestly.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Okay,
so like I said, we had a three-year-old who participated in swimming. Each sport has an individual age cutoff. If it's like an open division, then we have everyone from the youth to adult, and then we just break it out per age group. So it's for anybody in any age.
Oh. Could you try and describe the process of getting ready for everything for the Summer Iowa Games, or like the preparation?
So we really start trying to touch base with our commissioners and stuff in the fall, just making sure, you know, that they're still on board and trying to get with facilities. And then once the first of the year comes around, really start hunkering down. And we also have interns from January to July. So they help with both our winter games and our summer games, and then we bring on three more in May. So they really help us doing a lot of our phone marketing and our and anything really equipment to get ready to go for the games. Otherwise, it's getting schedules, combining divisions.
Right.
Now it's go time for us. So
right, and already the prep work for our winter Iowa Games has started.
And you said the winter Iowa Games take place in Dubuque mostly, right?
Yes,
and then we have another weekend, maybe two weekends in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, where we host more adult sports and then figure skating as well.
Does the attendance differentiate at all, or do you guys get about the same amount of people that come out for the winter games as the summer games?
It's different. We tend to get more about 4,000, 4,500, just because we drop from about 50 sports to about 14 so, just because we're limited. Facilities become hard to find in the winter. And then we also try to have some of your traditional winter game sports like alpine skiing, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing. But again, we're just limited on what we can offer. So our numbers go down a little bit because of that.
So from an economic standpoint, do you believe events like the Iowa Games have a big impact on the community and the city of Ames?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, between, you know, with the 14,000 athletes that come in, you know, that's not counting their parents and grandparents and siblings. So by the time, you know, they come play, it's over the course of 3 days. So, you know, there's 2 hotel night stays. You know, it gets heads in the beds for hotels, restaurants, it helps them, and just any shopping as well. And you can definitely tell when Iowa Games is in town. I remember that actually growing up because just all the people in town. Before having this job, I just knew to avoid all the restaurants because you're going to have a very long wait.
So what would you say the most gratifying part of your job is?
Just to know that you're providing that experience for someone that may not have gotten the ability or chance to participate in something like that before. And with the unique sports that we offer, I think that's interesting too.
For me, it's been that legacy of it being passed down as a tournament that is for everyone, and it's not just like an elite club type event, that it's providing that tournament-like atmosphere, family-friendly. It's fun. We have a huge, like Katie mentioned earlier, athlete jamboree that kicks off our entire weekend. Just receiving certain emails when you're coordinating with like a coach that saying, hey, I participated when I was a youth and I want to bring back the team that I'm now coaching. And just, it's just gratifying to know like this is really the true essence of sport. And it's, I would say, the glory and the nature of what it meant to be of just competing and fun for everyone involved. It's been really rewarding to have those conversations. And like with one coach, she competed and she lives in Wisconsin, but her team can come down and participate in our state games as well. And so she's bringing a team down. And so we have even out of state participants come and participate in our state games.
And I think what's fun about it too, that most people don't know, like I said earlier, we're part of a national congress of state games. And so every 2 years we have what's called the State Games of America. So like how the Olympics happen every 4 years, this happens every 2 years. So anyone that medals in one of our events, if it's a qualifying event, they get to go compete in that. And so last year it was held in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And then in 2019, it'll be in Lynchburg, Virginia. And those people are qualifying this year and then next summer, as well as in our winter games to qualify for those. So
you're representing the state of Iowa as an athlete competing against athletes of other states that host a state game. So Colorado, Minnesota, Missouri,
Hawaii,
Nebraska. So that's really unique in the sense that it's bigger on a larger level than just your state. And what's even exciting is that you can, as a city or a state, put a bid in to actually be the host of those state games.
So it's like an Olympics within our own country.
Yes.
Much.
Yep.
That's
absolutely.
Pretty cool. I didn't even know that was.
So it's a big, it's on a bigger level than just here in Ames.
Yeah.
So again, the games are they start on July 14th here in Ames. For any additional information for registration dates and stuff like that, you can go on to iowagames.org.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for stopping in the studio today. I really, really appreciate it.
Yep.
That was KHOI reporter Colin Berzak speaking with organizers of the Iowa Games, Director Katie Kramer and Assistant Sports Director Megan Hansen. Thank you, guys.
Mi corazón, hermosa criatura del viento, te agradezco por volar en mi interior. Tus colores me llevan adentro, te agradezco por llegar a mi corazón, hermosa criatura del viento. Te agradezco por volar en mi interior. Tus colores me llevan adentro. Pinta, pinta, pinta con el movimiento. De tus plumas sale una vibración que me abraza eternamente, que me enseña eternamente. Pinta, pinta, pinta con el movimiento. De tus plumas sale una vibración que me abraza eternamente, que me enseña eternamente. Te agradezco por entregar tu amistad. Ay, agradeciendo por esta hermosa claridad. la confianza y en la luz. Te agradezco por entregar tu amistad. Ay, agradeciendo por esta hermosa claridad, por la confianza y en la luz. Pinta, pinta, pinta con el movimiento de tus plumas, sale una vibración que me abraza eternamente, que me enseña eternamente. Pinta, pinta, pinta con el movimiento de tus plumas, sale una vibración que me abraza eternamente, que me enseña eternamente. Guacamayo, guacamayo, hey, hey, poderoso guacamayo, hey, hey, hey. Guacamayo, guacamayo, hey, hey, poderoso guacamayo, hey, hey, hey. Guacamayo, guacamayo, hey, hey, poderoso guacamayo, hey, hey, hey. Guacamayo, guacamayo, poderoso guacamayo, hey, hey. En tus ojos brilla una estrella, flechas de luz abriendo la pinta, tu corona de luz danzando en el viento, iluminando todo el espacio, ay, curando mi corazón, iluminando todo el espacio, ay, curando la familia. Guacamayo, guacamayo, hey, poderoso guacamayo, hey, hey, hey. Guacamayo, guacamayo, hey, poderoso guacamayo, hey, hey, hey. En tus ojos brilla una estrella, flecha de luz abriendo la pinta, tu corona de luz lanzando.
And that is Guacamayo by Danit Toybeg. And you are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Welcome. Another event of note is going to occur this weekend at the Blank Park Zoo in Des Moines. This one is tied to a significant environmental protection action that was quietly taken in Iowa to protect our national symbol, since it, the bald eagle, has returned to live among us. KHOI reporter Pat Schlarbaum brings us all the story.
Today with Jesse Lowry, what is your key role here at the Blank Park Zoo in Des Moines?
I am the Director of Conservation and Research here at Blank Park Zoo. I've been here for 13 years.
And you have an eagle display?
We sure do. We have two rehabbed eagles, Liberty and Spirit. They both came to us from the East Coast with various wing injuries and were non-releasable to the wild. And they get to live out their life here at the zoo and teach our 500,000 visitors per year about Iowa's beauty.
And you have a replica bald eagle nest.
We do now from you, Pat, and we're so excited to get that out to our public so people can walk up to it and feel the amazement that I felt the first time I saw it, too, of just how big those nests are and what an amazing, valuable animal that bald eagles are to Iowa.
Well, that's a real good point. So in your heart, what are the things about bald eagles that make this relevant to the Blank Park Zoo?
Obviously, bald eagles are our national symbol, and no one can deny the feeling that you get when you look at a bald eagle. And bald eagles need clean land and clean water to find their fish. And I feel like, you know, when bald eagles were really under pressure from DDT decades ago, the whole country came together to save the bald eagle. And now populations are doing much better and thriving again. And we're so lucky to have these birds in our state. And it's just really a fantastic conservation success story. But we have started our Iowa Hunters Lead the Way campaign to make sure that eagles continue to thrive because there are some more threats that are happening today.
Yeah, we'll touch on that in a little bit. But I certainly can relate to the uplifting moments that bald eagles provide. I think they're here to guide us to do more for conservation. Do you think?
I think they are. And I think that it's just a flagship species. It's a species that brings people from all different backgrounds and demographics together. No one can deny their beauty. But I was just working here at the zoo yesterday, and people are always surprised at what they sound like when they walk up to the exhibit. Okay. Because, of course, in most of the movies, when you see a bald eagle, it's the sound of a red-tailed hawk. So people always giggle when they hear what a bald eagle actually sounds like.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you notice the public kind of pointing out with your eagles that you have here on permanent display?
Their size. People are surprised at how big they are. And it's just a really great educational opportunity for people to get that up close to such a majestic animal.
Well, you mentioned the precedent. If we can bring back bald eagles, if that can spread to a lot of other species, and the monarch butterflies are come to mind. But you mentioned the hunters. Are there current issues or problems that our bald eagles are facing?
You know, about half of the eagles that come into wildlife rehabbers in the state of Iowa have lead poisoning. And this is oftentimes a byproduct of some of our state's hunting and fishing activities. Now, hunters in the state of Iowa and the Midwest are some of Iowa's original conservationists. They're the ones that are super connected to the land and out, really, you know, taking in the beauty of Iowa's nature. And a lot of folks just don't realize that some of the ammunition that folks usually use in their hunting activities, for example, shotgun slugs, when they hit the animal, they fragment into tiny little pieces, sometimes up to 400 pieces, and sometimes they can fragment into even a powder. And so these folks are trying to get all of the lead out of the deer carcass, you know, by field dressing the animal. But some of it is left in the environment. And of course, these gut piles are a very valuable food source for a lot of scavengers, but also including raptors like the bald eagle. And just a very tiny piece of lead can and just really ravage wildlife. And so what we want to do is partner with the hunting community and really talk to them about just how easy it is to switch to non-lead ammunition. And there's every single different kind of firearm that folks would use, especially for hunting in Iowa, there's going to be a non-lead alternative that is actually a premier option for hunting deer in Iowa.
So your program on Sunday kind of has a current event issue that you're striving to share. Let's talk about your speakers that you've invited. Who's all going to be presenting?
Sure. So this Sunday, July 15th at Blank Park Zoo is Eagle Day. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And we were thinking about who we would like to have come and tell the story of the bald eagle. We're going to have yourself come with a replica nest and talk about the eagle. We're also going to have Stephanie Shepherd from the DNR have a table and talk about eagle nest monitoring, which is another great thing that people in Iowa can do to help eagles thrive, as well as talk about how to build other types of raptor boxes. We're also going to have Bob Barnhill and Chief Golden Light Eagle will come and share some drumming and storytelling about the importance of eagles. Also, we'll have the City of Des Moines Park and Recreation come. They have a fabulous kids activity where kids can help build an eagle nest. We're also going to have an artist come, and she's going to come earlier in the morning and draw with chalk on the ground outlines of all the different raptor species that we have here in Iowa. And then kids can lay down and trace their wingspan with their arms, and then we'll take a big picture. It'll be kind of a public art piece. Of course, the zookeepers are going to talk about the eagles that we have here, and we're just really excited to highlight these beautiful animals. I also wanted to mention that we've got some other very special guests that are going to be at Eagle Day. We've got some wildlife rehabbers from the state, those people who are taking in those injured wildlife, who are doing such a fantastic service for us, will be here at the zoo as well talking about their important work. The Iowa Hunters Leading the Way campaign will be highlighted. And we've also got a discount for veterans. Veterans who are currently in the military or veterans will be let in for free, and their families are going to get a $2 discount. So that's a really special part of our event as well.
Very much so. And, you know, there is some sensitivity whenever guns are brought up and ammunition and those type of things. It sounds like you've laid out a pretty sound, non-threatening, and yet let's just all pull together. On occasion, I've heard wildlife individuals will say, well, there's a lot more bald eagles turning up exposed to lead poisoning, probably due to the lead deer slugs. But you're going to have this because there's just that many more eagles. And what would you make of that sort of perspective on this? That granted, there's a lot of eagles that are needing rehabilitation, but so often they die and yet try to distract the issue. How does that resonate with you?
I would say that part of that is coming from a polarization of these two different groups that really are the same, of big air quotes, conservationists and hunters, when hunters, the mass majority of hunters in Iowa, are true conservationists. And so I think there's just been a little bit of angst around this issue. And Blank Park Zoo wants to help and really just turn things around to a positive messaging and say, you know, here's the science, here's exactly, you know, what's happening to eagles. Yes, eagles are back in the state and they have rebounded, but it's a fraction of the historical number of eagles that we've had in the state. And I think that with all of these political conversations put aside, we can all agree that one lead poisoned eagle is too many. And if we instead partner with all of these different kinds of conservationists that care about Iowa and talk about alternatives, because deer hunting in Iowa is a conservation practice. And if we care about pollinators and ground nesting birds and all of these other native animals that need habitat, we need to control the deer population. And so we're hoping to reset the conversation and just encourage hunters to learn more about fragmentation of lead and learn about how these different types of ammunition will work in their firearm and get over some of these stumbling blocks. You know, because non-lead ammunition tends to be a little bit more expensive, a little bit harder to find. And so on our website, we have a whole retail distribution list of all the different places where they can get it. And I also wanted to just quickly mention, I mentioned anglers before. A lot of tackle is also made out of lead, and the lead will fall into the water and then be re-exposed to wildlife through perhaps waterfowl, you know, nibbling pebbles and things in the water, or even if a fish swallows a piece of lead tackle and then is eaten by an eagle. And so that's another way that wildlife can be exposed to lead. But of course, there's all kinds of alternatives to lead tackle as well. And so I think that we can use this beautiful animal, all come together, make sure that eagles can continue to thrive in our state, and talk about just how easy it is to switch to non-lead hunting and fishing.
Well, it sounds like you've got a wonderful program mapped out and quite an issue. It sounds like a wonderful opportunity. So 10 to 2, July 15th on Sunday. I hope the skies are blue. And, and right here in Des Moines, Iowa, there could be eagles soaring over the Blank Park Zoo that day. So let's look forward to a really nice program. Thank you, Jesse Lowry.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Pat. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are your hosts for this hour, Dennis Hart and
Ursula Rudenberg, and Mary Rankin has also joined us. Mary is the Sustainability Director for ISU and City of Ames and joins us every month, usually with another professional in the area of sustainability who helps further practices in our community. Mary, you did bring a guest today.
I did. I am most pleased to introduce my guest. I have AODG Ulawalana with me today. Io has just joined us at Iowa State University as our recycling coordinator. He's also doing special events coordination, so I've got to give credit to both parts of his position. But there's a couple of exciting things in having Io join me today. He brings so much wonderful experience with him from his former positions and leadership work that he's done. And also, we have not had a formal recycling coordinator position for over a decade at Iowa State University. We've continued to recycle, but we've done it through voluntary work of a number of different different individuals, and to have someone focused now on providing this experience to our students and incorporating this as a part of our formal and dedicated business operations at Iowa State University is so exciting.
Mary, is this because Iowa State could not find anybody for 10 years? Or
No, that's not the reason, actually. Well, we had a number part of sustainability, which we talk about, is economic sustainability. So through different budget challenges, shortages, limitations, and also then us, you know, prioritizing the various services that we knew we needed to have at Iowa State. And as different years come up, there are different priorities that may come up in the legislature or that just may come up as a result of the university.
This is a commitment on the part of the university.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Most definitely a commitment.
Well, welcome, Io.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, same here.
So exactly what are you going to be doing? Other than coordinating recycling, what does that mean at Iowa State University?
Thank you for having me. It's a great privilege to join the ISU team. Basically, recycling on a university campus as big as ISU is very critical because new generation leaders that will be true representative of what that university stands for. Sustainability is very key, which recycling is also part of. And, you know, when it comes to retention, one of the reasons why young kids that want to go to college choose a university, sustainability happens to be the top three. So it's very critical for ISU to begin to think in that direction. And, you know, recycling is also a huge part of that. So at this point, I think it's very exciting to see momentum that is very, very active. And I'm glad to join the team to advance that.
What changes do you see yourself potentially making? You've looked at the campus. You see what it's doing now. What do you want to change?
Recycling at ISU has been on survival mode over the last 10 years. So basically what I mean by that is the fact that things have just been, you know, we're just recycling. Majority of the campus entities, stakeholders, doesn't even know what the recycling process means. So right now what I'm bringing on board is to be able to engage all stakeholders, which includes the student, the faculty, staff, the visitors, as to what our recycling plan, waste reduction recycling plan means, how they can be part of it, you know, and this entails, you know, doing a constant messaging as to, okay, this is how we recycle, this is what we recycle, this is where our recycling bins are in all the buildings. And, you know, we want to build that recycling presence so that you don't even need to ask anybody where the recycling bin is. It's so obvious in terms of, you know, we have a consistent signage, we have a consistent design, things like that. That's one of the things that's currently missing at ISU, and that's one of the things I want to implement. And basically, currently, right now, we have more trash bins than recycling bins. So that has to go away, and that's one of the things I want to change. And hopefully, we're going to have a very robust recycling plan moving forward.
Doesn't it cost a lot of money to get recycling bins out there? How much of an investment are we talking about here at Iowa State?
Basically, you know, going by the inventory I've done so far, I think we have infrastructure on ground to be able to implement that. But, you know, again, we just need to manage the funds that we have right now in terms of, you know, buying more of those recycling bins in the buildings. But I believe that we have what we need to take to start. But another part of it is that, you know, there's always an opportunity to access grants to implement some of these projects. So I don't think that would be a big issue moving forward. But what we have on ground right now is well enough to kickstart the program.
Yeah, and I guess I would interject and say, first of all, Io is very brand new to this position. Yeah. So he's done a fabulous job of hitting the ground running. And one of the challenges that we had, even though, you know, a number of us have been working with recycling, we've been focusing on it, we've been on the ground with it, still, even having someone come in and get an idea of, okay, exactly how many bins do we have on the ground? Where are they? What is the messaging around them? We haven't not had a consistent model, but having the ability and the assurance that the model's being consistently put out on campus is a whole other thing when you've got a number of people sort of patchworking this together. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say is Io brings up a very good point, which I think is very representative of Iowa State from the standpoint of it doesn't mean to have a successful program, and there are levels of success, of course, but to have a successful program doesn't mean you have to have a considerable amount of money into that program. So I think Iowa State always looks at the opportunities to say, how can we have the best program, no matter if it's recycling or composting or a special event that we want to do on campus, how can we have the best program or the best opportunity initiative event with the funds we have, with the resources we have, and making that happen. If we have additional funds that come in, great, we can add to that success. But I always think we've been very, very effective and very, very savvy about what can we do with what we have here and now. So to your point about funds, most certainly, if we have funds come into us, we'll make good use of them. But in the interim, I think, as Io mentioned, we've got a good infrastructure on the ground. Getting that consistent message out and having a wonderful, consistent, dedicated resource toward assisting people will help us come a long way.
Mm-hmm. Do other universities across the country have recycling coordinators?
Most definitely. In fact, many have recycling teams. So even more than just one person at the helm for recycling. And I would also say, too, that IO's position, although it's named recycling coordinator, really branches out into waste management in general. So recycling is one little facet of how we can view waste. And IO really brings a great vision related to that. I would just mention that if the listeners can just have a little visual moment with me here. The Environmental Protection Agency has a waste management hierarchy that they basically use as giving direction to states. And it's information related to this actually is in the state code of Iowa related to the preferred management of waste. And so if you imagine an upside down triangle, at the very top of that triangle is in managing waste is just reducing the amount of waste that's even produced, that you have to make a decision related to how to manage that. You go down from there and you look at reuse options. Then you go to recycling, composting. Then you go to waste-derived fuel, which is what we do at the Resource Recovery Center, is a primary component of those operations. And then at the very, very minimum, you look at landfilling. And so IO is actually bringing a vision of us not only having a robust, consistent recycling program, but also really turning us to look at how can we best approach zero waste that actually goes in the landfill.
Absolutely. Just backing up a little bit, my previous position at my university, one of the things I was able to achieve was to institutionalize zero waste on that campus. And it's a good way to actually start a conversation or engaging the entire campus. What we did basically was just to identify key stakeholders, and we presented the plan to, institutionalize zero waste. What zero waste means is just try to reduce the amount of waste that goes to the landfill. And that just speaks to what Mary just mentioned, the hierarchy of the EPO regarding waste management. And that's my vision for Iowa State University. As big as Iowa State University is, we're looking at going into the future, how can we reduce amount of waste that ends up in the landfill. This is all encompassing. It's a very robust program. It involves, communication, messaging, contracts, purchasing, working with Department of Resident, working with athletics, some of these huge, huge entities on campus that actually generate this waste. How can we really engage them to make sure that, we reduce and divert as much as possible from the landfill? So I'm pretty much excited about this, and I know it's doable. Just like Mary said, we have the existing infrastructure to make this happen at Iowa State University.
And one would think that university students are open to this kind of messaging.
They are very open to this kind of messaging. I would say that one of the primary components, primary areas of interest for new students coming in is that tangible ability to reduce waste. Mm-hmm. Most definitely, I always liken the fact that when I came to college, I learned about the four R's. Students are getting this in preschool now. So they come to us and they're asking us, why aren't these four R's, actively and very much in place? And so we've got a very engaged student body in this, very excited. And it's just, as Io mentioned, it's a matter of that consistent messaging. We're excited to put that into place. We're so excited to have IO, and we're excited. This will be not only a full campus effort, but it will be a community opportunity as well.
And we've been hearing from Mary Rankin, the Sustainability Director for Iowa State and Ames, and Iodeji Olawala, Oluwalana. Who is the new recycling manager at Iowa State University? Mary, as we wrap up the show, what are your last words?
Well, I would just say that folks can keep updated on IO's work and vision and our collective efforts at Iowa State to produce even less waste that we send to the landfill on a daily basis. And, of course, we've got a wonderful partner with the Resource Recovery Center to assist us in that as well. But to keep up on that, check out the Live Green website, livegreen.iastate.edu, and also our recycling website at Iowa State that Iowa's already doing a lot of work on.
Before we were on the air, you were clarifying the difference between waste reclamation that the city does, which is to turn garbage into fuel.
Yeah, waste energy. Uh-huh.
Waste energy. The distinction between that and recycling, which is to turn objects into other objects.
Correct.
With the Iowa State Recycling Project, which will you be doing, IO? Will you be working on recycling or feeding into the city energy producing program?
Basically, my job and my plan is just to continue to revamp the recycling program. Mm-hmm. At Iowa State University, the current arrangement between the city and campus will still be in place, but the university feels that it's very important to actually start engaging different entities on campus as mm-hmm. to the proper way of recycling. Mm-hmm. You know, as other universities as big as Iowa State does. That's where I come in, and that's the plan moving forward, to have a robust recycling program. Mm-hmm. You know, even just like Mary mentioned earlier, you know, we have that hierarchy. So, you know, our goal is the first 3 hours, you know, reduce, reuse, and recycle.
Okay, so this is a recycling program.
Exactly. So first 3 hours, you know, takes care of that. Then the second to the last stage of the hierarchy, which is waste to energy, is what the university, mm-hmm. The university has also partnership with the city. Mm-hmm. That's the waste to energy program.
Okay, thank you.
And I think even though IO is being very humble in the fact that his position is called recycling coordinator, he has visions of how do we reduce the waste, how do we reuse the waste, before it even comes down to actually what's in the purview of his position. So he's already taken on those extra roles and is excited to continue to do that.
Absolutely.
Mary and Io, thank you very much. We'd like to recycle our time, but we're out of it, unfortunately. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And we've been your host for the hour. She's Ursula Rudenberg. I'm Dennis Hart. Thank you for listening. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. right here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org. And find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. It's worth it. Check it out. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Guacamayo by Dani Treubeg from her CD, Aliento. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come on and join the local team. We're going to be losing a lot of our interns soon, so we need reporters. Come on down.
But she and I, Russell and I, are not interns. We'll be around for a while. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 o'clock and Morning Masterpieces at 9. Remember, you, the listener, you're what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again right here on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun every Saturday, located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza. The Farmers Market brings fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment.